Week 137 of Brada's Branded Thoughts here at From the Hawkeye of the Storm, broadcasting as always from Ames, Iowa, the heart of the storm. I am joined by Alex Brada here on our podcast this week. And Alex, we've got three straight Iowa wins in football. We've got a basketball game coming up Wednesday, a basketball game coming up Friday. This is an exciting time of the year. As always, we have to throw in the caveat that COVID is still here, and it's still ravaging through a lot of the different parts of the country. Now, thankfully now, as opposed to 4 or 5 months ago when we had these conversations, people have, doctors and scientists have they understand COVID better now. And we see things are able to succeed from a football and sports standpoint. First of all, three straight wins, and all three in dominating fashion. How hard is it to look back? And we do this, we seem to do this almost on a yearly basis with either football or basketball, but how hard, Alex, is it to look back and think, oh, we'd only beaten Northwestern? If we'd only beaten Purdue. I mean, if Iowa had beaten Northwestern, let me just recap this for everybody. Northwestern's undefeated. They beat Wisconsin Saturday. If Iowa had beaten Northwestern, all right, first of all, Iowa's got two losses right now, Northwestern zero. They would be tied. Iowa would have the tiebreaker. Again, Iowa would be in control of its own destiny in the West, and I think we both agree Ohio State doesn't look – I mean, look, I'm not trying to say that Iowa would beat Ohio State if they played, but Indiana played Ohio State really tough this past weekend. We saw Rutgers play – Ohio State tough at times. Same with Nebraska. I mean, those games were lopsided, but they weren't the typical blowout fashion games that we see from Ohio State against the lower tier teams in the Big Ten. Now, I'm not calling Indiana lower tier. I think they're probably one of the top two or three teams in the Big Ten this year, but I don't know. It's just hard because you look back at that Northwestern game, 17-0. Iowa was up 17-0. There's no reason for them to have lost that game. And at the time, we didn't know how important that game was, although I think we both agreed it was an important game. And I, beginning of the season, I thought, boy, I was nervous about Northwestern because they had a down year. Pat Fitzgerald is a tremendous coach. They get their from Indiana, Peyton Ramsey. If only Iowa had won that game. And the Purdue game, it is what it is. Obviously, that one Iowa should have won as well. Iowa should honestly be undefeated right now at 5-0. I anybody wants to take me on in that conversation, I'd be happy to have that conversation. Now Purdue was missing a lot that first game. There was no reason for Iowa to lose that game, but they lost. And the Northwestern game, you should never lose a 17-0 lead. And if Iowa had not abandoned the run like they did, it would be a totally different season and outlook for the rest of the year. Alex, what are your thoughts when you look back at Purdue and Northwestern?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think the Purdue loss was probably a worse loss. It's hard because this year is such a wacky year, and to go right in, you know, the first game, it's not totally surprising that they lose that game, but I think it's still a more disappointing loss. The Northwestern loss is obviously bad because they were up, but Northwestern we knew was probably going to be a good team, and they typically play Iowa really tough, so I mean, that wasn't as surprising, but obviously that would, if they could have even won one of those two games, you know, going forward, that would help them a lot. And if you look at pretty much, so you had two games that were, you know, Northwestern's a 1-point loss, Purdue was 4. I mean, those are both obviously winnable games. And if you look at the schedule going forward, I mean, I don't see any other games that I don't feel good about at this point. Obviously, we didn't feel that good after the first and second week, but now, I mean, you feel like if they had won those first two games, they probably could have ran the table, to be honest. And
the thing about it is, the reason why that Northwestern game is so much more important from a West standpoint is Northwestern is literally up by 3 games on Iowa. You could say, well, it's 2 games. No, it's not. It's 3 games because they'd have a tiebreaker if they tie. The only way Iowa wins the West now is Northwestern loses out and Iowa wins out. Now, could that happen? I think Iowa definitely could win out. The problem is I don't see how Northwestern's going to lose another game. Lose a game. They haven't lost a game. They play Michigan State. They play Illinois. They play Minnesota. Now, the good news about those games if you're an Iowa fan. Minnesota looks better than they did coming off that win on Friday night against Purdue. Michigan State, that's going to be the one. I have no idea how Michigan State's going to beat Northwestern. That would take a miracle because they look just terrible. They look maybe like the worst team in the Big Ten. And Illinois looked better last week in beating, romping Nebraska. So who knows? I mean, Brandon Peters plays at quarterback for Illinois. Then I could see a win there for, Illinois maybe gets a rivalry game against Northwestern. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here against Northwestern. But I'm just saying if Iowa had beaten Northwestern, they'd both be tied with one loss, and Iowa would have the tiebreaker. It's literally like a four-game swing. It's literally a four-game swing because you lost that one game. Now, the Purdue loss, I agree with you. That's the one they shouldn't have. But say Iowa had won that game against Purdue. Okay, now Purdue's out of the factor. But Iowa would still be 4-2. Or, excuse me, 3-1. They'd be 4-1. Excuse me. They would be 4-1. They'd still be two games back at Northwestern because Northwestern would be undefeated and have the tiebreaker. So that Northwestern game was incredibly important for standings. You know, it's just difficult. And I just, as poor a quarterback play as we've had the majority of the year, this offensive line is dominating their opponent right now. Now, again, I want to preface this by saying Minnesota's defensive line and their linebackers suck. Okay. Michigan State sucks. And Penn State is better than their record. I think this was Iowa's best win this past weekend at Penn State. But Penn State's missing quite a bit on offense, though, especially. And, of course, they lost Micah Parsons, their star linebacker, heading into the year. But still, Iowa ran up and down the field on them for the most part. Penn State had some success with some run blitzes, especially on some of those stretch plays that Iowa tries to lean out wide and just kind of came up short on creating space on those runs. But Iowa dominated that game on Saturday. So you just wonder. I think, you know, we're going to get to our discussion about Nebraska coming up here. I'll just tell you right now, I think Iowa is going to dominate that game. And now maybe that's a scary thing to say. This is the first week where I've said I think Iowa is going to dominate any game this year. But I just, going by what I saw with Nebraska last week, going by what I've seen from Iowa the last 3 weeks. Now, Nebraska had, you know, they've played Iowa tough the last couple of years, forced the last second field goals from Iowa in both years. But again, we'll get to that game later. Let's start here with our discussion on this game with Spencer Petras, Alex, because Spencer has struggled this year. I think that's been well documented. Game one, no touchdowns, no picks against Purdue. I thought that was his best performance thus far, but look, just rifled every pass in, couldn't hit a deep ball. Wasn't real accurate, pretty inconsistent. Did have a strong arm, and we could tell, but just no consistency there. Looked uncomfortable in the pocket. Very similar to what we saw week two, except week two, Northwestern forced some turnovers. By the way, Northwestern's defense is terrific. We saw them cause chaos for Wisconsin's offense this past weekend. And then in week three, things started to come together because Iowa started to go run heavy. I didn't think Petras played all that well week three against Michigan State. I still thought he was forcing too much. He wasn't letting enough steam off some of these throws. Wasn't able to really complete anything downfield. Week four against Minnesota, we saw a couple completions that were longer than 20 yards. One that comes to mind was Deshaun Byer down the field. Petras did underthrow it. Byer came back to catch it. But still not real comfortable. I saw a breakthrough this past week, and I know you don't agree with me, but I thought Petras looked a lot more comfortable in the pocket. He had some beautiful throws, and I mean beautiful throws, not just throws where, okay, now we're getting back to average. No, he had some darts. I think about the throw down the seam to Nico Reganey. I think about the throw to Sam Laporta down by the goal line, down at his feet, was a tremendous throw. He put that ball on the money. The only way it was going to be caught was if he put it right where he did. That was a tremendous throw. He also had some head scratchers. You think of the throw early in the game that should have been picked off, could have changed the complexity of that first half. He missed a ball deep to Amir Smith-Marset. I do think Smith-Marset led up on that run. I think it was closer than Smith-Marset maybe made it appear to be. And that pass was close anyways. Whether he led up or not, that was a close pass. And we're seeing Spencer start to let off a little bit of the MPHs here on some of these throws. seems like he's getting a little bit more comfortable with crossing routes and putting balls on target and not having to rifle them high and hot every single time. What's your overall take from Saturday's game from a quarterback standpoint?
Well, I don't know if I'd call it a breakthrough. I think the thing is you know this kid's got to be playing a lot better than this in practice. I mean, he's been around for a while. Parents has been very adamant that he's the guy. So really what I see that as is basically playing up to his own level. You know, if he's making passes like that, I'm sure he's making those in practice. So he's just been below his own level. It's not like he's really, I guess you could call it a breakthrough, but I don't really see it like that. I think if he's just plays, if he doesn't play poorly, because to me, the way he's been playing has probably been poorly. The confidence that Ferentz has had in him just makes me think that what he's shown so far this season has not been his true self. So I think if he just starts, you know, to be able to get comfortable, and I think he did a little bit, maybe he can settle in and just start playing the way he ought to. So overall, I mean, obviously I felt better with him making some passes. I want to see him, you know, obviously put more touch on the ball. I think he is tending to just, you know, wing him too much, kind of like Stanley. We saw that quite a bit.
He's getting better with that, though. I mean, I you have to admit he has improved on that note from games 1 to 2 to game 5. I mean, he was not rifling passes quite as hard this past week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think he is. It does seem like, it's hard to say from the small sample size we've seen, but it seems like he's tuning it in a little bit. That's something I remember saying about Stanley over the years. He just needs to dial it in, because I felt like he was just being too safe. Stanley, especially on deep balls, was just being a little too safe and just overthrowing his guy, probably a little bit on purpose. And I felt like if he could just dial that in, but he never really did. But you know,
this is Spencer's first half of his first year. So, I mean, I agree. Stanley never really broke through, but I think we came to appreciate Stanley. I think quarterbacks are just underappreciated sometimes when they don't win championships. And I get it. That's the name of the game. But I think these first 4 games of this year made us appreciate Nate Stanley and how composed he was. And he was very composed in the pocket. Would you agree with that? I mean, he didn't always make the deep throws. Sometimes he put a little bit too much on him. He wasn't the most accurate. He was a composed quarterback. He had control of things.
Yeah. And I think that is one strength that Stanley had over Petras, is that he could take contact. And I think that probably made him a little more confident, because most quarterbacks, you know, when they get touched, they're down pretty much.
Well, I think Petras can take contact.
I think he probably can, but I don't think it's to the extent of Stanley from what I've seen so far.
He's a big guy.
He's a big guy, but he doesn't look nearly as strong as Stanley to me.
Well, he's also, you know, he's a redshirt sophomore. So, I mean, he's going to get stronger. I mean, he's actually, I think, maybe a little bit taller than Stanley. And I actually think he might be a little heavier than Stanley. I'd have to look up the bios on both those guys. But when you look at the running game right now, give me a percentage chance that Tyler Linderbaum returns to school next year as a redshirt sophomore. This year, he's being projected by a lot of draft boards first, second round. Is there any chance he comes back next year as long as he stays healthy?
I mean, probably not, but there's always a chance. It seems like we've had guys in the past that definitely could have gone pro right out of the gate, and they came back, but, you know, it's probably unlikely. I think Iowa's known to be a school that puts out good NFL talent, so they get a lot of attention from scouts, and, you know, it'd be hard to turn down the payday right away, especially in a game like football. You know, to me, if I was a basketball player, I'd be more likely to come back for another season, because the injury risk just isn't as high. But in football, you know, that's a huge factor, so I wouldn't expect him back.
What about Larrick Jackson? I mean, he's obviously a senior, but he would be eligible to come back for another year if he chose to, because it's a free year. But he seems to be playing really good football right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see him back personally, but just my opinion.
Coy Kronk's been hurt. We've seen a lot of Mark Kallenberger. I don't know if you noticed this. At the end of last week, Jack Plum came into the game. Ferentz alluded to this after the game, that maybe Kallenberger got a little banged up. That's something to watch this week because, you know, again, that was towards the tail end of the game. I didn't really get a read on how well Plum played But keep in mind that Coy Cronk's already been out. Kallenberger is on the depth chart for this week against Nebraska, but if he's banged up, perhaps we won't see him. Is Cronk healthy enough to start? We'll see on that. I mean, it'll be interesting to just follow this. Cronk wasn't playing all that well when he got hurt. I mean, that Northwestern game was ugly for Coy Cronk. And, you know, that's something to follow. That might be a kid who decides to come back for a sixth year. If he, you know, doesn't feel like he got the most of it because of injury or just not comfortable yet with the blocking schemes here at Iowa, maybe he decides to come back. And then as far as the interior, Kyler Schott's been out. We expect him back this week, which is good news for Iowa, but not expected to start. I mean, Cody Ince at left guard. I mean, you hear it on these television broadcasts from Matt Millen, Big Ten Network, this past weekend. And if you just watch Cody Ince, that kid's playing really good football. This is good. This is very good if you're Iowa, because we talked about guard play last year, how much it struggled. Again, small enough sample size that we want to continue to see this before we name Cody Ince the next great interior lineman at Iowa. But I think what we're seeing from Ince and a pretty solid fifth-year senior in Cole Banwart, you got to be excited about the interior of the line right now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel great about the line in general. I mean, so far they've been really good. And, you know, we had concerns coming in, which we don't usually have as Iowa fans. But I think so far they've met and exceeded our expectations.
Justin Britt is also available along that line. And, hey, if Plum can get comfortable and he can be a guy you rotate at tackle, man alive, you got Jackson, you've got Plum, you've got Coy Cronk, you've got Kallenberger. They are building depth very similar to what Phil Parker does at defensive back. Mostly they tend to get a lot of guys involved with special teams and even in actual gameplay, regular gameplay, defensive play. And you build that depth up and we can see what's happened. Very similar to what Phil Parker's done along the defensive line. I mean, think about the many guys Iowa's got, and that kind of brings us to the defensive line to discuss, because you know, week one and two, I wasn't real sure about what I thought about this defensive line. And again, I know it's Minnesota who's struggled this year. Michigan State has struggled mightily and Penn State struggled mightily. But this defensive line for Iowa right now is playing its freaking tail off. Listen, they lost A.J. Epenesa. I don't see a drop-off. I really don't. I really don't see a drop-off from the defensive line as a whole. I don't think anybody's is matching A.J. Epenesa single-handedly, but they are matching the production of last year's team, in my honest opinion. Chauncey Golston's playing spectacular. Zach Van Valkenburg, you remember I pumped him up last year. Nobody else seemed to want to talk about him. He was a kid that if you just watch his film from last year, constant energy and motor, just tons of energy, and we're seeing that this year. He's playing fantastic. Joe Evans is a guy that they're rotating in at defensive end as well. We've even seen a little of Yaya Black. I think that's mainly because John Wagoner's been out. I think Wagoner's got COVID. Nobody, of course, can confirm that, but I'm certain that he's got COVID and he will not be back this week. Should be back next week. But you look at the defensive end right now. Defensive ends are playing well, and then you pair those guys with what's been a very, very, very solid interior of the defensive line. I mean, Davion Nixon, he's another guy. I don't know how he's coming. I don't see any way he comes back next year. I really don't. Would love it if he did, but he's just right now. He's a specimen to me. He's, you know, from everything I'm hearing, he's shooting up draft boards, and I'm not a draft expert, but just judging by the eye test, I can't imagine him being lower than a second round pick this next year. And then, you know, Jack Heflin, another guy nobody's talking about. If you watch tape week in and week out, Heflin is a beast. And I wasn't sure about him week one against Purdue. Didn't think he had the best of games. But if you watch Heflin, he is moving his guy almost every single time, clogging up space, rock solid guy to have there next to Davion.
Yeah, I mean, so far it's been kind of a funny season because we've had, you know, a couple early games that didn't go well, and then we've had three games that went excellent. So, you know, as of late, they've just been excellent on both sides of the ball. Both lines have just been dominant pretty much. And Van Valkenburg's really been impressive. Nixon's been impressive. They've pretty much all been impressive. And I'm really impressed with the linebacker play, too. I think that was not a I didn't think it was going to be a weak spot, maybe, but it was kind of a question mark coming in, and I think they've been really good so far. So in, at
yeah,
least
linebackers
in the past,
have been, yeah, that's, and that was one thing I expressed a little bit of concern preseason, just because I've seen a year or two, I think 2014 was pretty bad, Iowa linebacker. Maybe even 2013 wasn't the best, but I'm thinking like Quentin Alston, Reggie Spearman. They just weren't very good, and Iowa suffered. But boy, seems like Phil Parker just has got almost every position on his field, on his side of the ball, just figured out. And Kayvon Merriweather has stepped up to strong safety, which I'd said prior to this year. I said he was a guy that was going to have to step up there if Iowa was going to have success. Seth Benson and Jack Campbell seem to both be healthy now. We didn't mention Austin Schulte. He seems to be healthy now on the defensive line. Defensive backs had a couple moments on Saturday that they'll want to get corrected. I thought Matt Hankins had a couple poor showings on those back-to-back touchdown plays where he got beat badly on the second play and just poor tackling on the first touchdown. So he's got to fix those things. But, you know, he's a senior. He's always responded well in the past when he's given up big plays. I expect that to continue. I think Moss has played well. I don't know that he's played great. I think he's played well. He got beat on a play on Saturday that was overthrown. I don't know if you remember this late in the game. He got beat bad, and again, it was incomplete. But had that been a touchdown, could have certainly changed our perspective on how Riley's played. I think Jack Kerner is playing just tremendous football right now. You know, I just don't see a weakness on this defense, really. I think maybe, you know, if you can – I think the biggest weakness right now is probably – giving up a big play here or there, because Iowa has done so well year after year. They've done the same thing this year with bending and not breaking. Think about how much Minnesota moved the ball. Even Penn State moved the ball quite a bit on Saturday. But again, Iowa bends and doesn't break. But typically in a season where Iowa has some ups and downs, Iowa at some point will give up a couple bombs. And, you know, that's going to happen. But that is going to be my biggest concern about the defense right now. But right now, statistically, they're one of, if not the best defenses in the Big Ten, right up there with Northwestern.
Yeah, I'd agree. Kind of always the concern for me is the secondary, it seems like, the past few years. And you just kind of, even when you had Desmond King and Josh Jackson, it just seemed like that was the area that I always felt the most nervous about. Maybe not.
You know, I think it's because of the scheme. I don't think it's because of personnel. I think it's because of the scheme. Yeah. I think these corners are bred here to be the bend, don't break, soft zone corners. And when they get put out on an island, sometimes I just think maybe it catches them off guard. And I don't know. I don't know how else to describe it. They just don't seem to be one-on-one corners necessarily here at Iowa.
Right. You know, especially when they get lined up against a guy who's really good, that makes me nervous immediately. I'm like, I just don't feel confident in the past few years of having anyone since Jackson and Desmond King who I could feel comfortable with if you have a really good, talented wide receiver on the other side. So, I mean, that's always kind of, I guess, my concern. But so far, they've managed it well. I think that's all they have to do is just manage it. And I think they've actually played better than that. I mean, they've created a lot of points. You know, Northwestern was basically the defense that was scoring points, and you know, they've actually done better than just game management so far. So I think as long as they're solid, I think that'll be good enough, as good as the rest of this defense is.
I texted Eric Sells on Saturday during the game. And I told him after that Davion Nixon touchdown, I said, and this is not an exaggeration, this is just the honest truth, that play by Davion Nixon was the most impressive play by a defensive lineman that I've seen at Iowa since 2009, when Adrian Claiborne blocked the Penn State punt, scooped and scored in Happy Valley. How freaking impressive was that? A guy who's 305 pounds... and just took it to the house.
Yeah, I mean, he's a beast. Yeah. What's funny is when a guy gets a hold of the ball like that, you almost want him. I mean, part of me wants him to, you know, wrap it up and be safe, but part of me wants to see him try and take it all the way, especially even if there's, you know, guys he has to beat where he, you know, he was kind of out in front of the pack for the most part, but he's just such a beast that you kind of want to see that. So, I mean, he's fast too. Like, he didn't, I don't remember the other defense or the offense being from the other team being able to even catch up to him, really. You know, he ran almost like a, I don't know, he ran like a guy who is an lineman. So
he said that was his first, he said that was his first career touchdown in any level of football. That doesn't even seem possible. I mean, never has scored a touchdown at any level ever. That doesn't make sense. Guys play both sides in, I mean, that just is crazy to me. Even in peewee leagues, he said he's never scored a touchdown.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, if he's on the offensive line, though, I mean, playing multiple positions probably.
I know, but at some point, you'd think he would have scored by now. I mean, even if it was on a trick play where, you know, he's an eligible receiver. I mean, just, or like I say, a fumble in the end zone where you recover it for a touch. I mean, just, I'm just surprised by that. And, but boy, he looked like he could, you like the comment, I don't know who it was. Was it Rick Pizzo that asked about if he would be up for a one-on-one versus Luka Garza? Did you like Davion Nixon's expression when he asked that question?
I don't think I heard that.
You'll have to look it up on Twitter or YouTube afterwards. He asked him, he's like, because you know what Davion Nixon called that a Euro step was what he did. And he's right. That was a Euro step. He yeah. went over the top and he's like, he's like, that was a Euro step what I did there. And he's like, so Rick Pizzo says, would you be willing to take that one-on-one versus Luka Garza? And Davion Nixon kind of gave the camera a look like, you know, maybe. So I'd love to see that matchup. So, again, dominant defensively.
I think it's easier if you don't have to worry about dribbles and you can take as many steps as you want.
Well, it is funny because Davion said after the game that he saw the offensive lineman behind him. He was going to try to go through the quarterback, but then he saw the offensive lineman behind him, and that's when he decided to do the Euro steps. It's just when I said it was as impressive as I've seen, you know, impressive play as I've ever seen a lineman make. I say that because when you look at that play, he made it look easy. I mean, it was so smooth. I mean, the interception was as impressive enough. It was impressive enough. It reminded me of Broderick Benz back in 2010 versus Arizona. That's a tough pass to catch, and then he just takes it back with no problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I want to see his 40 time because he looked faster to me than he looked kind of almost smooth and fast. Like, I don't know if you saw, who was it? There was a guy at the combine this past year, but where some guys don't look like they're terribly fast, but if you look at the whole spread of the defense, the fact that nobody really caught up to him, and I think that he's faster than he looks, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of time he runs in 40.
Yeah, I have a hard time seeing him coming back next year. Offensively, we're not seeing much production from our wide receivers. I mean, that's just, I think that continues to be the disappointing thing, but I say disappointing, and I also think, well, Iowa's winning games by, you know, they're blowing teams out right now. So I don't think you can be real disappointed with it. We're seeing great blocking down the field from Amir Smith-Marset and Brandon Smith. We've seen Nico Reganey get involved. Tyron Tracy's there as well. I think Iowa's just got a lot of weapons offensively right now, and they can win without getting a ton of production from the wide receivers. If Iowa was 6-0, I keep saying six games, they played five. If Iowa was 5-0, we wouldn't be complaining about anything offensively because Iowa would be 5-0. It wouldn't matter. It is disappointing that they couldn't get the running game or the wide receivers involved games one or two. But it seems like Brandon Smith and Amir Smith-Marset are being good leaders out there right now. A guy that I want to give a shout out to that I think has played tremendous football so far is Sean Beyer. Nobody's talking about him. Everybody wants to talk about Sam Laporta, and Laporta's played well also. But how good has Sean Beyer been? I mean, from blocking, you know, he comes in a lot of these blocking sets, and he's made some catches. I mean, you see his athleticism.
Yeah, he had a play. I can't remember what it was, but just this past Saturday, that was really impressive.
I think it was the hurdle. He hurdled a guy.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like the TJ. I think he loaded that from TJ.
Yeah. Yeah, that was impressive. I mean, I actually think said something out loud because I was so surprised that that happened. But.
No, I'm telling you, you know, you always made fun of me because I compared him to Noah Fant. By the way, Noah Shannon, we didn't mention him. He's also playing on the defensive line. But Noah Fant, no, he's not like Fant. But you could see a little Hockenson in him from a standpoint of he's deceptively athletic, seems to have good hands, and can block. And I give him a chance. I don't know. Again, he's had injury problems. If he had a healthy career here, I think he'd have an excellent chance at the next level. We'll see what he can do. I mean, maybe he's a guy. I think absolutely if I'm Sean Beyer and I don't hear a good enough stuff from scouts, I'm begging Kirk, let me play next year. Let me come back for a sixth year because I think he's got some of the tools. And boy, imagine having him and Laporta back next year as safety valves for Petras year two. That would allow guys like Josiah Miemann and then Elijah Yelverton to really develop some more. And then at running back, I mean, what can you say? Both Mekhi Sargent and Tyler Goodson are playing really, really good football. You wouldn't have been able to tell who was a starter this past week. Sargent got over 100 yards. They're both averaging, what, 5-6 a carry? It's ridiculous. And then, Ivory Kelly Martin's come in as a kind of a placeholder and has held his own. Also, Matt Millen loves him some Monty Potabom. I can tell you that. He was really talking up the fullback. And he's playing well. I think we all expected an Iowa fullback to just play his tail off when he gets in the game. And we're seeing that as well. I don't see a weakness offensively right now other than consistency at quarterback.
Yeah, I'd agree. You know, I think obviously I'm the guy who likes more of the old-fashioned way of using a fullback and even more usage than that probably. But I was just thinking so far, you know, we kind of got spoiled, I think, with Nate Stanley because he was exceptionally strong as a quarterback. And so far, Petras has done well on sneaks, and I think that's probably more the line. So I don't know how... I think we just gotten used to being able to get a 1 or 2 yard push every time. But if that stops happening, I would personally like to see Potabom be able to, you know, get the ball in his hand. Obviously he's an excellent blocker, lead blocker, and that's what he's designed for, I guess. But, I'd like
to see. Petras is sneaking the ball well. I mean, Petras is, I don't think he's missed a step from Stanley.
I don't think so, but I don't know how much of that is him and how much is the guards. To me,
why does it matter?
It doesn't really matter, I guess, but going forward, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, if we, let's say next year, or if you lose guys or if this year, who knows? I mean, I just don't see the same strength level with Petras.
Why are you obsessed with getting the fullback to run? I mean,
I'm not only obsessed with getting the fullback to run. I'm obsessed. I want to have a direct snap to the fullback. Like, just get the quarterback out of the picture and just snap it to the fullback.
You know, are you surprised that the Wildcat has worked as well as it has?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm surprised that it's really been used. But
I'm not saying that Tyler Goodson, having Goodson and Kelly Martin or Goodson and Sargent back there is tremendous. But I will say, I think a big factor is that offensive line is no matter what they line up in, for the most part, they're probably 80% of the time they're winning their matchups.
Right.
So,
yeah, I think part of that is on the run game is Potabom. I mean, he's been, it's easy to overlook, you know, fullback because he's not the focus. But if you actually watch him, I mean, he's basically destroying his guys most of the time. I mean, he's not missing blocks hardly at all. So, I mean, the run game it's really, I think, come together if you consider, you know, all parts of the blocking. Even the down to the wide receivers have been really good. Obviously, Brandon Smith is a beast of a guy. So he's kind of expect that. But Smith Marset's been really good blocking. So I think it's kind of all come together.
So, yeah, Saturday started off kind of odd. Iowa allowed Will Levis, their quarterback that they decided to start, to basically run up the middle for 5-6 yards every play. They go down and score a touchdown after Iowa's field goal, go up 7-3, and then it was all Iowa from there on out. I mean, it was 31-7 in the third quarter, 24-7 at halftime. Iowa jumped on them 31-7. I thought Iowa got a little complacent. The fumble on the snap, which I don't know if that was Linderbaum or that was Petras. Commentators, Matt Millen seemed to think it was more Petras pulling out too soon. That might be true. But nevertheless, the defense got complacent and put a little glimmer of hope inside Penn State and then Davion Nixon basically shut that door quickly. One more thing before we move on. Are you at all concerned about Keith Duncan right now?
I mean, it's definitely not. It's definitely been unexpected. I mean, he's he hasn't looked good. I mean, that's all I can say. Obviously, with a kicker, you don't get that much of a sample size to really tell. But, you know, he's had misses and razor thin makes, and we're just not used to seeing that. I mean, in past years, we're used to seeing him drill stuff down the middle, like with maximum margins of error, and he just hasn't done that so far. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's such a small sample size. I'm not going to draw any conclusions yet, but I can't say I'm worried. He's proven himself before, so but it definitely is a little bit strange to see.
I can tell you this, and he may come back for a sixth year. I don't know about that. I don't think there's any way that Keith Duncan makes it in the NFL, and I say that because he can't kick over 50. He just cannot kick over 50 yards. That is his max, and you can't play in the NFL if you can't kick 55, 60 yards. I just don't think you can. And we've seen him with a couple attempts from 50, and he missed both of them badly. Yeah. So, you know, I think Caleb Shudak is definitely the guy right now over 50. I'd like to see him get a shot at 50 because Keith Duncan doesn't look comfortable right now. I hope I'm wrong. I hope Keith Duncan can end up playing at the next level. I think that's probably what his goals are. But it's tough as a kicker. I mean, you have to be able to pretty much be 100%. And I don't know. We'll see. Well, I'm not going to shut the door on him yet because I think he was the best kicker in the country last year. Don't think he's going to get that award this year. He didn't get it last year. He should have. That Blankenship kid that now kicks for the Colts got it. But I think he's the best. He was best kicker in the country last year. And maybe he's just in a funk right now. I mean, he hasn't gotten a whole lot of opportunities. But yeah, that one kick early in the game, boy, he just barely made that. And then the other kick later in the game from 27 wasn't as easy as it may have looked. That was, he just fit that through that right upright. So that'll be something to monitor moving forward. Torrey Taylor probably didn't play as well as he had been, but he's still been tremendous. You know, Charlie Jones, that's another thing that I was going to want to correct. They had some penalties this past week. You know, it sucks when you have two Charlie Jones run. But I mean, you can tell every time Charlie Jones gets the ball. I don't want to compare him to Tim Dwight. I wasn't around when Tim Dwight played, but if you just watch highlight reels of Tim Dwight, Charlie Jones has a little Tim Dwight in him. I mean, he is dangerous on these punt returns. But the problem is when you know, hold or you have an illegal block or a block in the back, you can forget it. It doesn't matter. So they got to figure that out because that can be a weapon, but it's going to be negated every time they commit a stupid penalty on these special teams plays. And I think LeVar Woods will help clean that up as well. And, you know, kickoff return, we haven't seen much. I think kickoff returns have really been taken away from the game, except on a windy day. Guys kick it through the back of the end zone, and right. You know, even when they don't, it's hard. It's just hard. I wish their kickoff returns were a bigger part of today's college football you know, world, but they just aren't anymore.
They've
But again, I think Smith Marset, I'm sure he is chomping at the bit for an opportunity at a kick return. So we'll talk Iowa, Nebraska here in a second. Again, we've got to realize that Iowa is basically out of the West race. I mean, they need Northwestern to lose the last 2 weeks, and both weeks, games that Purdue could have won, game that Wisconsin could have won, and they didn't. Northwestern closed those games out. If you're Iowa, all you can do is root for whoever plays Northwestern, and there's a glimmer. Who knows if Iowa? Who do they play this week? You want to look that up real quick? I'm gonna grab Northwestern schedule. I think they play Minnesota this week, but if it's Michigan State, what's that?
I had it up, but I don't have it now. Let me look it up.
Wisconsin, Iowa right now. Iowa can, if they control their own destiny, to finish second in the conference. If they win the rest of the games, I believe. Iowa would need Purdue. I don't know how that would work with a three-team tiebreak if it was Purdue, Wisconsin, and Iowa, because the Purdue-Wisconsin game got canceled. So I think it's a matchup. So it would probably end up being Purdue that would get that. So I think Iowa needs Purdue to lose once more also. Because they're 2-2. But I think they will lose again. And again, I think it comes down to Northwestern. Iowa Conference, they'll probably end up, or in the West, they'll probably end up playing in Indiana, which I think we both agree that'd be a heck of a ball game. It's not going to be Michigan. It's not going to be Michigan State. It's not going to be Penn State. I mean, those two, three teams. The West is better. Can we agree the West is better right now than the East? And I don't think we've ever said that before, ever. But the West is better than the East. You've got Ohio State, Indiana at the top. Got a Maryland team that I don't know what to make of them. They haven't played because of COVID recently. They were 2-1 before they went on their break. And then you've got Michigan, Michigan State, and who am I missing? Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State. Yeah, Penn State. And then Rutgers, I think they're more of a, you know, right there with Michigan. Honestly, that game this on past Saturday went into, what, double, triple overtime? I think it was triple overtime, and Michigan found a way to win. But the West right now looks strong. You've got Iowa and Wisconsin, Northwestern, that all look very strong. Minnesota came back, won against Purdue. Still don't think they're where they want to be, but who knows? Maybe they've turned a corner. I think Purdue is pretty good. Illinois looked a lot better. Nebraska looks bad, but they looked good against Penn State. So it's just, I think it's a give and take right now, week to week, but I do think the West looks better. Do you have Northwestern schedule?
Yeah, they play Michigan State this week. So they lose that game, I guess. I mean, that gives you quite a bit of hope, right?
if they lose to Michigan State this week, that gives me a lot of hope, because that's the easiest game left on their schedule. Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, see, Wisconsin's got one loss, so they don't clinch with a win this week, because they technically could still lose the last 2 weeks and the last two games. If Wisconsin won out, they would win the conference or the West, but they could clinch in 2 weeks. So again, it's just disappointing they lost those first two games, but certainly Iowa's got things to build on. And I just think it's been a joy to watch Iowa football these last 3 weeks. And I thought, well, I'm going to be dampened because Iowa's not going to have a chance at the West. I really haven't felt that. I mean, during these games, to me, and maybe you don't agree, we love seeing deep balls down the field, but we're so used to Iowa not being able to consistently run the football. I just think it's been an absolute joy to watch Iowa dominate the line of scrimmage, and it's just fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this looks more like the style of Iowa team that I would want if I was choosing an Iowa team to really, you know, go far, in that, you know, the run game is the base, but they're not totally dependent on it, and because they obviously have weapons through the air, but the run game has been really dominant. So, like, honestly, if quarterback position was playing really well, let's say even looking to next year, I mean, obviously you're going to be dealing with losing certain people, but let's say you could, you know, go back 5 weeks and you could basically just make the quarterback position better. I think this team really would be really tough for anybody to deal with in the Big Ten. Like you said, this year it's been kind of a down year for the East. I mean, we're not used to seeing Penn State doing what they're doing. We're not used to Michigan being kind of semi-crappy. And, you know, Ohio State doesn't look so dominant. But anyway, so yeah, I think the way this team is designed right now is probably my ideal type of Iowa team. If you were to just fix the quarterback and quarterback play, I think everything else is pretty much as good as you could hope for.
Let's transition to making our picks for this week in college basketball. If you didn't listen to the podcast last week, preview show, head on over to storycounty.news and click on From the Hawkeye of the Storm, From the Hawkeye of the Storm. Get that preview, but we are going to talk specifically week one and two games this week for Iowa. There was some uncertainty about this game on Wednesday because North Carolina Central was on a break because of COVID, and they were expected to resume either Sunday or Monday. We reached out to North Carolina Central, their administration, and they confirmed to us that they were resuming practice on Monday, and indeed they did. And my understanding is they're now in Iowa City. So that's good news. Now, they'll be tested once they get here. I'm assuming that means they were already tested. They'll probably be tested again tomorrow. But that sounds like, you know, it sounds like Iowa's going to be able to play on Wednesday. I mean, these games early, I really think these are the ones that we're unsure about if they get played. And it's a day-to-day thing because we, you know, Iowa can't really ensure that North Carolina Central and these, you know, Southern University, these teams they play first couple of weeks are going to have the same protocols the Big Ten has. And even down the line, Gonzaga. I mean, that's a game that we all want to see, but Gonzaga's in the West Coast Conference. They do not have the protocol that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have. So, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see. But we expect to see North Carolina Central tomorrow. Alex, we've been so busy talking about what this basketball team is and what it can be. We have to spend a moment to recognize how difficult of a period of time this has been for Jack Nungy. I mean, the guy sits out 2 years ago because he wasn't really ready for his sophomore year from a physical standpoint, wanted to get bigger, get stronger, get ready for the Big Ten. Then last year, guys are talking about how he's the next NBA guy from Iowa and tears out his knee, three or four games into the year. Works to get back, rehabs all year, works through COVID like everyone else. They're 5 days from the start, 4 days from the start of the season, and he gets a call early in the morning that his dad, who is an emergency room doctor in Indiana, has passed away suddenly. I mean, how hard is this going to be for him? We don't expect him to play tomorrow. Fran McCaffrey made it clear that Jack's going to take as much time as he needs back in Indiana with his girlfriend and his family. I don't expect him to play this week. Now, maybe he'll be back Friday, and maybe what he needs is to be with his team, because I'm sure those guys are like family to him. But how hard has this got to be for Jack? What a terrible stretch for that young man.
Yeah, I mean, about as bad as it gets. You know, having a season-ending injury has got to be terrible from that perspective, of an athlete, because especially somebody who's thinking about going pro, I mean, their whole career really depends on it and their future. So that's terrible, and then you can't understate the amount of, wrenches thrown into the works of COVID, and then having your dad die. I can't even imagine that. So, the good news, I guess, is from a basketball perspective, is that this Iowa team is very good and they're pretty stacked. And, I think they'll be able to manage without him. So hopefully he can take as much time as he needs. And, they've got a little bit of time here before that. Well, not a lot of time, I guess, but they do have a little bit of time before they play anybody serious, but then they kind of get thrown into the fire. So, hopefully he can just take as much time as he needs and be ready when he comes back.
From a basketball standpoint, and again, he does, I agree with you, he needs to take as much time as he needs back home. But from a basketball standpoint, I mean, they play North Carolina in a week and a half, Alex.
Yeah.
All right, excuse me, 2 weeks from today. 2 weeks from today.
December 8th, I think.
Yeah, December 8th. So, I we want the best for Jack. Obviously, that's a lot more important than basketball. From a basketball standpoint, though, I think he needs to get a game or two under his belt before that game, don't you think? I mean, hasn't played. He played, three or four games last year? Didn't play the year before that? And then he's going to miss the first game or two this year? I mean, I think he needs to play that Western Illinois game. If he's not able to, if he needs to be with his, fine. But I don't think the smart thing to do is to throw him into the fire against North Carolina. Not at practice. I don't see how these guys are playing. Maybe he's ready and Fran doesn't care if it's, the number 16 Tar Heels. But I just don't know if that's the wisest thing. I think at least get him in, if they can get him. I would think he'd be back by the 3rd of December, which is the Western Illinois game. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if that's the situation, if he's not got any game experience under his belt, I don't think I'd want to see him start. I wouldn't mind seeing him play.
Well, he's not going to start either way. I don't think he's going to start either way, is he? You anticipate him starting when he comes back?
No, well, I mean, I'm saying if he's going into the North Carolina game totally without any play at all. I don't mind seeing him playing that game as long as it's just limited minutes. I don't it depends on how he plays. You can put him in for a little bit, and if he's really gelling well with everybody, I think that you could probably, you know, roll with that. I think Fran's a good coach, so he'll be able to figure that out. But yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't plan my game plan around him probably too much. If he's not got much, even if he's got one other game, I don't know. It's a tough decision. It's more of a coach's thing, I guess. But yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see, because we're not used to seeing this team with him out there. I mean, we saw him so little last year, and he didn't really have much impact when he played, but you felt like he was getting into the swing of things.
He didn't have much impact.
No, I mean, last year when he played, he was kind of out there, but he wasn't really, like, you didn't really notice him. And I think he was just, it seemed like he was being tentative. I don't know.
I hope he tears the rim down this year.
Well, remember, I mean, I was hoping last year, because we didn't know how good Garza was going to be, but I was hoping that they would be just, you know, a force inside. And I just remember him being more out on the perimeter. Maybe that's just what the game plan was. But
well, he's going to have to be more inside this year because they lost Kreener. I mean, he's got to play inside. I mean,
yeah,
that is if and this is what I stated, I think, last week on the preview show. If I have a concern for Iowa basketball this year, besides the obvious, and that's COVID, and you know, games being played, I think my concern is front court, and they got the best front court player, probably the best player in the country in Garza. But the problem becomes, okay, Nunji is going to be, I guess, playing the five when Garza goes out. I don't know that he's a five. Now, you play small ball, fine. I mean, they can maybe do that, and I'm sure they can survive that way. And maybe Nunji's big enough, and you know, but like you said, we saw him play outside a lot last year when he did play. Can he be a true five? The other thing was, a long time ago, months ago, I said, I think the one guy that we're going to see a lot of playing time this year from is Josh Ogundele. We had a conversation with him here on the show a month or two back, and he seemed like he was you know, getting comfortable with the system, and then he gets COVID, and it set him back. And here's the issue, Alex. He's the one guy from a roster perspective that I looked at and said they need him the most. But he's the one guy that Fran has singled out and said that he's behind everyone else. I mean, the media asked him on Monday, and usually Fran's just blowing away with glowing colors for everybody. They basically asked him on Monday, you know, which freshman are you going to see making an immediate impact? And he mentioned the guards, Tony Perkins, Tony Euless. I was surprised how much praise he's heaping on Keegan and Chris Murray, especially Keegan, saying that Keegan just rebounds the ball at an extremely high level. Didn't expect to hear that, but he has said that Josh Ogundele is behind, and he's not really mentioned him as far as guy that he expects to get significant minutes even early on. I hope he plays these first three games, because these are the games you got to get him involved in. But are you concerned about front court depth when you look at, okay, you've got Nunji, you've got Garza, but who's behind him? Maybe Keegan Murray, but as a freshman, he's 6'8". He's not a five.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're kind of used to being able to ride Garza pretty hard, but obviously you got to get your big guys rest. And last year, Kreener was a guy who, you know, he wasn't a guy who's really necessarily a difference maker, but he was a guy who was never a negative. You know, when he's out there, he's just very solid. He can do a lot of things. He can even do, you know, shoot the three, and you know, he was just a solid guy, dependable, knew the system, had been there for a long time. So you're definitely gonna miss a guy like that, I think. So it could be an issue. I'm not gonna say it will be necessarily, you know, depth, but yeah, there's just not that many options right now. It'll depend on who they play too. I mean, some teams you don't need guys like that so much, especially in today's basketball world. So they might be able to get by, but you know, the Big Ten tends to have teams that have some big guys you got to deal with. So, you know,
so there's going to be nights. They're going to be nights where Garza plays 37, 38 minutes. I mean, I really do believe that. I don't think he's going to come out much. But I look at it more from a perspective of maybe Garza's not one of the seven guys that we know that has had COVID. Maybe he hasn't had COVID yet. He gets COVID and they got this ridiculous 21-day protocol. Who's going to play? Or you know, he, what if he tears his knee? Now, God forbid that happens. I don't, that could happen to anybody, but I think if he tears his knee, a lot of our expectations will change. But I don't know. I hope Nungy can be the guy that slides into that position, and I hope Ogundele can get there. I mean, you know, 6'10", he's a big boy. Maybe I'm guessing where he's behind at right now is his fitness level. I'm guessing that's what has set him back, because he needed to get in shape when he got here anyways, and then getting COVID, I think he's probably just been behind. Hopefully from a skill standpoint, he could come in. I would hope that he, even though he got COVID, you'd hope that he could at least spot them 4 or 5 minutes a game, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you want to, you know, work guys in anyways. So, you know, like, especially in the NBA, they talk about playing yourself in shape. Well, that's a little different because you have so many games. But, yeah, especially with Nungy, you kind of hope that he's going to be the guy that you're going to depend on, and Gondolet will have time to, you know, really get ready. But who knows? It's definitely a different season. It's definitely a strange year, so we're definitely probably going to have to deal with, you know, wacky circumstances. So.
So I'm looking right here at the standings for last year in, now granted, I get it, they're in the Mid-Eastern Conference, but North Carolina Central last year, let me find their record last year. Mid-Eastern. They finished number one in the conference last year. They were 13-3 in the conference. Finished the season on a six-game winning streak. And they won the regular season title in the Mid-Eastern Conference. I mean, what are your thoughts on this opening game? I mean, you're typically going to play a lower-tier team, but I'd say, you know, if you're going to play somebody from the Mid-American or the Metro Atlantic or whatever that is, or the Mid-Eastern, you're going to try to play the best teams from those conferences, and Iowa hasn't always done that. I think this is maybe a little bit underrated team coming into Iowa City that maybe could test Iowa early.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it go both ways where, you know, you have a real challenge game, or you see a team that, you know, was good in their conference last year, and then they just get blown out by 45 points. So it's hard to know. I mean, obviously, you want to, if you're Fran, you want to have real tune-up games, especially the way this season, you know, the way the schedule looks this year, which is tougher early on than any season I've ever seen. So, you know, hopefully they are a good team. I want to see them. I would want this to be a battle, to be honest. I don't want to see it. I don't even want to see a 15, 20 point win. I'd rather see a closer game, to be honest. So hopefully that's the case.
I'm looking here at last year's tournament, because they did get part of their conference tournament in, because they play theirs earlier than the other major conferences, which of course Iowa's in the Big Ten got canceled completely. North Carolina Central had advanced to the semifinals before the tournament was canceled. So if you don't think they're hungry, you got something else coming. This is North Carolina Central team again, won the regular season last year in the MEAC. They advanced to the semifinals, got the season canceled. I mean, imagine how disappointed they were, a team from a mid-major that certainly had a chance to make the NCAA tournament. And I think you'd have to say they were the favorites to make the NCAA tournament. You know, they blew out Delaware State in their first game, squeaked by North Carolina A&T State. But I don't know. It's just going to be maybe a little bit underrated as far as a game. Let's get to our picks for this game. What do you see here? I mean, what's a key? I don't want to say maybe a key, because I think both of us think that Iowa can basically do whatever in these first two games, play around with the lineups and win. But I guess, what are your predictions and what do you want to see?
I haven't really thought about it much, I guess. But, I mean, mainly I'd like to see everyone just seem like they're communicating well on defense and moving well, you know, making the proper switches and moving well in zone and whatever. That's the main thing. I don't worry so much about the offense, I guess, but you know, I don't worry at all about Garza getting his. That would be probably the last thing I'd say is the key. Get Garza involved. But I guess mainly just getting guys playing well together. That probably sounds cliched, but especially on defense, I think that's the main thing with Iowa in general. I don't know. I think that and trying to test the waters a bit with the guys you got playing, because you do have quite a few guys that are, you know, haven't really played together, I guess, even though they've been part of the team. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm actually pretty excited to see what they do. I think there's a lot of mouths to feed, so that'll be interesting to see how Fran deals with that. But yeah, I guess mainly just to get guys into the flow, and communicating on defense is my big one.
By the way, Southern University, the game on Friday, they finished second in their conference in the SWAC last year, advanced to the semifinals before their season tournament was pulled out from under them. So they got to have some motivation. I think they probably looked at the situation and said, hey, we can make the NCAA tournament last year. So there's some motivation there. I mean, these teams aren't, listen, I know it's North Carolina Central and Southern, and Iowa's number five in the country, but these are not, you know, these are not Missouri, Kansas City teams. I mean, these are teams that in their respective conferences have been competing as of late. Southern finished 13-5 in their conference last year. Let me look up Western Illinois here. Of course, that's the game the following Thursday. 20 basketball. Western Illinois. Let's see here. So Western Illinois is in the Summit League. And last year they finished. Well, that's not a team that was very good last year. They went 2-14 in their conference, 5-21 overall. So that might be a name your score game. I mean, these first two games could be a name your score game, but I still think Iowa, you got to give Iowa credit. Obviously, they scored, they scheduled Gonzaga, North Carolina, Iowa State. But they also got a couple good mid-majors in North Carolina Central and Southern. So it'd be a couple tests. I think the key for me is, you know, getting some guys. I say this every year probably about this time, but this year especially because of COVID and the circumstances and it being a free eligibility year, get Tony Perkins in the game. Get Aaron Ulis in the game. Get the Murray twins. I hope Ogundele is physically able to come in. Get him in the game. You know, you want Iowa to be tested, but you don't want it to be so close where Iowa, Fran feels the need to ride his starters. I mean, what will you say if Iowa goes out there and loses to North Carolina Central tomorrow?
I don't know.
Oh, crap.
Not necessarily. I mean,
the number five team losing at home to North Carolina Central isn't an oh, crap moment.
Well, obviously, it sucks, but as far as, you know, I think more in terms of how that bodes for other games. I don't necessarily know that that would doom them against better teams. Maybe it would show that they're not as good as we thought, but I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it would be a bit of an oh crap, I guess. But I honestly, this game, I want to see it close. I don't really want to see it comfortable, to be honest. I'd like to have them at least be on edge the whole game. You know, I don't want to see, you know, maybe double-digit leads, but not much more than that. You know, because I think this game, or this season, rather, they're thrown in the fire so early on in the schedule that I don't think you want to get complacent at all. That probably will happen in the second game, unfortunately, but maybe if this first game is close, maybe that can help them out down the road.
Okay, so Fran named his starting lineup for Wednesday. It's Jordan Bohannon, CJ Frederick, Joe Wieskamp, Connor McCaffrey at the four, Garza at the five. Surprised or not surprised?
I mean, Wieskamp at the four, I guess. With the situation, I'm not overly surprised.
No, Connor at the four.
Oh, Connor at the four.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, he played a lot of four last year. I don't know. I know people that say that they don't think Iowa can survive the whole year and be a top five team with Connor at the four all year, but I think Connor held his own last year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'd want to see that too much, but I'm sure they'll get away with it for now, probably, and You know, he's a guy that...
Who are they going to start, though? That's my point. Well, they don't have any other fours.
Yeah, right now, I think you probably have to, so hopefully they get away with it. I don't think you'd want to see that. You want to see that against Gonzaga and
Carolina? I think we will see it against... Who else are we going to see there? Nungy? You going to put Nungy at the four?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm serious. Who else are you going to put there? Unless Keegan Murray is 1,000 times better than I think he is, I don't know what other options they have, because I don't think Nungy is going to be starting. I could be wrong. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I guess it could depend on what lineup you're seeing. I mean, if I'm North Carolina and if I'm the coach in North Carolina and I see Iowa's putting McCaffrey out there at four, I'm, you know what I'm going to put in at four. So I don't know.
Well, I think it's going to make Iowa play a lot of zone this year, and they better be crisp with the zone. You know, I've been impressed with the amount of emphasis that everybody's been putting on defense. And obviously, I mean, you say, well, of course they need to put emphasis on defense if I was going to, you know, make it to a Final Four. But, you know, it gives me comfort when I see a lot of guys talking about defense. There was an ESPN article a day or two ago that they interviewed Luka Garza, and their last question was basically, what's the key? What's the one thing that has to happen this year for Iowa to be great? And he said, we got to play better defense. And I just, doesn't that make you feel a little bit more comforted when they're actually acknowledging it? And he's acknowledging it, and he's the leader of this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't make me feel great. I think they, if they weren't acknowledging that, then that would be a big concern. I think it's just kind of the baseline of what you got to do, especially, you know, like, for instance, I just Googled, you know, AP top 25 in Iowa. I don't know if you noticed, but on Google, it has the drop down arrow where when you first click on or when you first open the page, it only shows the top five. And then you hit the drop down, it shows the rest. It's funny to see Iowa in that top five. You don't even have to click the drop down, and that's in the top 25. has that ever happened? Has Iowa ever been a preseason?
Yeah, they were preseason. I think back maybe 50, 60 years ago, I looked it up and they were, but not in the modern era.
Yeah.
Not for preseason. Remember, they were up to number three, I think, in 2015 with Utah, and then they quickly fell down.
Right. Yeah, I mean, to me, this is totally different because I could see an Iowa team, you know, we've seen on football and basketball where they play really well and they play out, you know, above their expectations. We're not used to seeing that going into a season just because, you know, Iowa's not a school in general that gets high recruits in football and basketball anyway, so... To have that kind of hype going in is just totally off the wall.
But remember, Iowa has improved defensively slowly but surely over the last few years. But last year, they were 97th in adjusted defensive efficiency, according to Ken Pomeroy. And that's bad. I mean, that is still bad. 97? I don't think any team has ever made the Final Four with anything lower than like a 60. I think we talked about this last week in the show in our preview. Iowa was fifth overall in adjusted offensive efficiency. So they got to get that number up. I mean, you got to make that's a big jump. When you look at how they've improved over the last few years, it's good, but it's been steady. It's not been a huge jump. They've got to make a big jump this year in order to do great things. So I hope we see it. Let's see here. Trying to look. See it here. Preseason. Let me get preseason here from Ken Pomeroy. He's not as high on Iowa. He's got Iowa at 13th. He's got Iowa as the 72nd best defensive team in the country. Got him as the second best offensive team, but the 72nd best. That's not going to be good enough. I don't think that's going to be good enough. I mean, to make a Final Four run, that's... And I think that... Don't you agree that Final Four is the expectation? I think if they win, if they get to the Sweet 16 and lose... It won't be great, but people will say, hey, it's the first Sweet 16 in, what, 20-some years? I really think, though, Elite Eight is... If Iowa can make the Elite Eight, people are going to be happy. Of course, they're going to be thrilled to make the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Elite Eight, if I... You know, obviously, as a player and as a coach, your goal is to win, but, you know, Elite Eight, I feel like if they do less than that... Sweet 16 would be nice, obviously, but anything less than that, especially, would be a big letdown. I think Elite Eight is kind of my, like, floor. You know, I don't want to see... I'd like to see I'll be happy with Elite Eight, I guess. I mean, obviously, when you're ranked number five going in, you're right on that cusp of being expected to potentially go all the way. So,
can they win the national title?
Well, I mean, if they, I mean, seriously, if their defense is good, which I don't see, honestly, I don't see any way it can be good enough to confidently say that. But yeah, the thing is, you know, if even if they're manageably well, you know, if their defense is serviceable, you know, if they're that dangerous on offense, that's a team that even if they're not expected to go that far, that can be really dangerous in the tournament. So it's not, I wouldn't be confident at all saying that, but I think they probably would have a you know, puncher's chance, I guess, even if their defense isn't great. So, you know, I don't know. I think there's a pretty high ceiling, even if the floor is a little lower. You know, if typically if you're talking about a team that's top five preseason, you're thinking maybe the floor is a little higher than Iowa's is, in my opinion, but I think maybe the ceiling's a little higher yet just because of the way they're built. So I don't know. I mean, I have high hopes for them.
What will you say if Jordan Bohannon hits game-winning three at the buzzer in the national title game? And they're down by two, and he hits the three to win by one.
I will say, like, if you get a game in the tournament and he starts doing that crap like he's done before, I mean, when he really hasn't had national attention for that, if he does it in the tournament, I mean, people are going to be paying attention seriously. Because think of how big an impact a guy like Steph Curry's had where he can do that type of thing. And, you know, you don't see that. Even in college, there's been some, you know, you see a lot of really fantastic talent, you know, Carson Edwards, guys like that who are just can go off. But even somebody like that, you know, Bohannon's shooting ability is better than his by far, I think. So if he's less of a player in every other way, probably, but to have a guy who's that good at something that's as valued right now as long range shooting, you know, if he does that in the tournament, the attention he's going to get is going to be off the charts. So that would be
Let's not forget that CJ Frederick had the highest 3-point percentage in the Big Ten last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's the guy he's the solid guy that can score. Obviously that's Garza, I guess, but the solid guy who's a guard that can go get a basket, you know, he's the one that I'm confident in. I was hoping it'd be Wieskamp a couple of years ago, but you know, Fredericks shows the ability to really drive in, whereas Wieskamp doesn't seem to be able to get past. You can't really get a hip pass guys anymore, it seems like. So Frederick is that guy, and that's helped by the fact that he can shoot the three that well. You know, guys got to play up on him a little bit, and so he's, you know, he can get that first step. So yeah, I mean, hopefully he stays healthy. That was the only thing last year, is just making sure he stayed healthy.
All right, let's make some picks. Let's talk. We're going to start with college basketball, then we'll swing over to, actually, let's start with the NFL. We saw a weird game last night. Tom Brady taking down Jared Goff taking down Tom Brady, and the Buccaneers, that's who they are. What were your thoughts on Tom Brady walking off the field without shaking Goff's hand?
I heard about it, but I didn't see it.
I call that Bush League. Bush League. Oh, by the way, did you think that Ferentz calling those three timeouts against Minnesota was Bush League, as the rules expert said?
Honestly,
I didn't think it was Bush League.
Me being a fan, or if I was a player, I like that crap. I don't care. Like,
well, it was because they kept their first team in, and they were calling timeouts to try to score, which is retarded, honestly, when you're up 35-0.
I think I've talked about this with Fran. If you're a guy, and I think, I don't know who it was that you interviewed that kind of said the same thing about him, but you want somebody who you're going into battle with, and you know, you want somebody with an edge and who's going to fight, even if it's, you know,
Fran McCaffrey's got an edge.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's no question with him. I think there's, you know, sometimes more of a question with Ferentz. So it's nice to see, I think, as a guy who's, you know, a fan, and especially as a player, I think if you're a player, you got to love that. I, you know, I don't want to see my coach back down from anybody, even if it's the proper thing to do. Who cares? It's within the rules.
They should have tore down the goalposts. They should have tore down the goalposts like they
is
did.
Is it that easy to tear down a goalpost? Like, is it always that easy to just pull them down? Or
well, when you have 100, when you have, you know, you've dressed 56 guys on your whatever it is, sure. You know, let me run through some scores this past week in the NFL. Seahawks beat the Cardinals in a good one. The Browns beat the Eagles. Falcons fell to the Saints. The Washington football team, they beat the Bengals. Panthers over the Lions. Steelers blew out the Jaguars. Titans over the Ravens. Texans over the Patriots. Broncos over the Dolphins. The Jets fell to the Chargers. The Colts beat the Packers. The Cowboys beat the Vikings. The Chiefs beat the Raiders in a great Sunday night game there. And the Rams beat the Buccaneers. Let's make our picks real quickly for Week 12, which, of course, will start this Thursday. We start with Texans-Lions. This is a Thanksgiving Day game. CBS, 11:30 a.m. up in Detroit.
I'll go with Detroit.
I like Detroit as well. I'd love to see. We give everybody, Hawkeye fans, we don't often get to see Hawkinson. It seems like the local sports people like to put on the Vikings, the Packers, or the Bears in the NFC North. But we'll get actually get Matt Stafford throw to TJ Hawkinson. So that'll be fun. But I will go with Detroit. Washington and Dallas. This is a battle between the NFC East, which is maybe the worst any conference has ever been, any division has ever been in the NFL. Who you got this game? 3:30 p.m. Central Time on Fox.
I'll probably go with the Cowboys.
I'll go with Dallas as well. Ravens-Steelers is going to be the marquee game of the day, no question about it. Battle in the AFC North, NBC at 7:20 p.m.
I'll go with the Steelers.
I will go with the Steelers as well. Raiders-Falcons on Sunday, noon.
I'll go Raiders.
I like the Raiders, too. Bills and Chargers, noon on CBS.
I'll go with the Bills.
I like the Bills. Giants-Bengals, noon on Fox.
I'll go with the Giants.
I'll go Giants as well. Joe Burrow is out for the Cincinnati Bengals. How about the Titans and the Colts, 7:30? Or excuse me, both teams are 7-3. That's why I said 7:30. That game will be at noon on Fox, or excuse me, CBS.
I'll go with the Titans.
I like Indianapolis in that one. Panthers and Vikings, noon on Fox.
Panthers.
They get Christian McCaffrey back Sunday. I will go with Carolina. Cardinals, Patriots, noon on Fox. Should be a good one.
I'll go with the Cardinals.
I like the Cardinals. Dolphins, Jets, noon on CBS. Can't believe you're pausing about this one.
I'll go with the Dolphins.
I'll go Dolphins as well. Browns, Jags, noon on CBS.
I'll go with the Browns.
I like Cleveland. Saints and Broncos, 3:05 on Fox.
I'll go with the Broncos.
I got the Broncos in an upset. 49ers, Rams, 3:05 on Fox.
I'll go with the Niners.
I like the 49ers as well. Actually, I'm going to go Rams. I got Rams there. Is Garoppolo back yet?
No clue.
Chiefs and Buccaneers, 3:25 on CBS.
I go with the Chiefs.
I like the Buccaneers in an upset. And Bears-Packers, 7:20 on Sunday night.
I'll go with the Packers.
I like the Packers. Monday, Seahawks and Eagles, 7:15 p.m.
I'll go with the Seahawks.
I will go with the Eagles in an upset. And that moves us over to college basketball. Make some picks for college basketball for the first time all year. Let's go with, let's see here. Get a list of all the games. There have been some games canceled. There's going to be games canceled, especially in the non-conference. There have been some canceled, but a lot still happening. So we start out with, let's see, Limestone and James Madison. Who you got?
I'll go with Limestone.
I'm going to go with James Madison there. We're not picking that game, in all honesty. How about this game? How about some Big Ten action? McNeese State and Nebraska. How will Fred Hoiberg do here with his squad? Quite a bit of turnover, but I think expected to be better on a lot of different counts. Who you got, Huskers or McNeese?
Oh, the Huskers.
I'll go with Nebraska in that one. George Washington and Navy, 11 a.m. on CBS Sports. By the way, the Nebraska game will be 11 a.m. as well on BTN on Wednesday. But who you got, George Washington and Navy?
I'll go with Navy.
What are you basing that on?
Nothing.
I'll go George Washington.
I was really paying attention. I was looking at Gonzaga. You realize on Thursday they play Kansas, number 6, and then they play Auburn the next day.
Yeah, Gonzaga's schedule is ridiculous, but they do a great job scheduling because they play in the worst, you know, one of the worst conferences cumulatively in America. So they have to do that. Radford and Virginia Tech will get a chance to see Cordell Pemsel, hopefully, in that game, 11 a.m. on the ACC Network X.
I'll go with Virginia Tech.
I'll go Virginia Tech as well. Oakland and Xavier, 11 a.m.
I'll go with Xavier.
I like Xavier. Let's scroll down to some better matchups. How about number 4, Virginia, taking on Towson in Connecticut, 12:30 p.m.
I love Virginia.
I like Virginia. Big Ten action here. Maybe Iowa's biggest rival in the Big Ten. Number 8, Illinois, taking on North Carolina A&T, 1 p.m. on Big Ten Network.
Illinois.
I like Illinois. Illinois State taking on number 23, Ohio State, ESPN at 1.
I'll go with Ohio State.
Ohio State, 1 p.m., Old Dominion, and Maryland.
I'll go with Maryland.
I'll go Maryland. We're almost basically going with the favorite every game because it's, you know, we really don't know what to expect out of most of these teams. Memphis and St. Mary's could be a good one, 1 p.m. on ESPN2.
I'll go with Memphis.
Part of the Bad Boy Moores crossover classic up at the Sanford Pentagon in Sioux Falls, where Iowa will play Gonzaga. I will go with St. Mary's. Drake and Kansas State. That's a game to watch for a lot of locals. 1 p.m. on ESPNU in the Little Apple Classic.
I'll go with Kansas State.
I'm going to go Matt Gaetans and Drake. I think they find a way to beat Kansas State, and what a win that would be early on for the Bulldogs. How about number 17, Houston, and taking on Lamar, 2 p.m. ESPN+.
What day is that?
Wednesday.
Oh. That's tomorrow. Okay. I'll go with Houston.
I've got Houston as well. How about Bowling Green taking on number 25, Michigan? 3 p.m. ESPN 2.
I'll go with Michigan.
I've got Michigan as well. Let's see here. Oklahoma State taking on Texas Arlington. This is a game at Texas Arlington. 3 p.m. on ESPN. Could be a fun one for the Cowboys.
I'll go with Oklahoma State.
I'll go Okie State as well. Evansville, Todd Licklider. I think Todd Licklider is still the coach of Evansville, I think. They're on the road at the Yum Center, in the KFC Yum Center in Louisville, taking on the Louisville Cardinal, 3 p.m. on Wednesday.
I'll go with Louisville.
Go with Louisville as well, although Evansville had that win over Duke last year, so you never know. Western Kentucky and Northern Iowa also up at the Sanford Pentagon, 3:30 p.m. on ESPNU. You get to all see, boy, three Iowa games on the ESPN, or excuse me, on national television on Wednesday. You've got Drake playing on ESPN Network. You've got Northern Iowa playing on an ESPN Network. And then, of course, Iowa on BTN. But who you got 3:30 tomorrow? Western Kentucky and Northern Iowa.
I'll go with Northern Iowa.
We'll go with Northern Iowa as well. Eastern Michigan and number 13, Michigan State, 5 p.m. Big Ten Network.
I'll go with Michigan State.
Michigan State, 5 p.m. for number 16, North Carolina, taking on Charleston.
Who are they? Who's North Carolina playing?
Charleston.
Charleston. I'll take North Carolina.
Okay, North Carolina. How about Liberty at Purdue? No, excuse me. This is at the Titan Fieldhouse down in Melbourne, Florida, 5 p.m. The Space Coast Classic, Liberty and Purdue, CBS Sports Network.
I'll go with Purdue.
I've got Purdue as well. And we won't do this every week. Just so if everybody, you're sitting here thinking, why the heck are you picking all these games? This is kind of just a, you know, first day of college basketball. We figured we'd make some picks. We won't make picks for Friday, and we won't make regular picks. Of course, we'll pick the Iowa games and some Big Ten games, but we will not make these picks normally. Northwestern State, Iowa knows that name from Iowa's 2006, I think it was 2006, the NCAA tournament that Iowa fell short in against Northwestern State. 6 p.m., they're taking on the number 14 seed Texas Tech Red Raiders on the Big 12 Network and ESPN Plus.
I'll go with Texas Tech.
I've got Tech as well. 6 p.m. for number 18, Arizona State, taking on Rhode Island up in Uncasville, Connecticut on ESPN.
I'll go with Rhode Island.
I've got Arizona State on the road there. Sacred Heart at number 24, Rutgers. Rutgers certainly a dark horse this year in the Big Ten.
I'll go with Rutgers.
I've got Rutgers. Colorado State in California, 6 p.m.
I'll go with Colorado State.
That game will be up at Gill Coliseum in Corvallis, Oregon. I've got California. And we are getting to the end here. Green Bay in Minnesota, 6 p.m. up in Minneapolis.
I'll go with Minnesota.
I've got Minnesota as well. Let's see. Lots of games going on Wednesday despite some cancellations. Texas Rio Grande Valley taking on number 19 Texas, 7 p.m.
I'll go with Texas.
I've got Texas. Tennessee Tech taking on Indiana, 7 p.m. Big Ten Network.
I'll go with Indiana.
At Indiana, South Dakota, Trey Dickerson's alma mater taking on Colorado, 7 p.m. ESPN Plus.
Is that South Dakota State?
No, South Dakota.
Coyotes. I'll go with Colorado.
I've got Colorado. That game also being played in Manhattan, Kansas, part of that Little Apple Classic. Texas San Antonio taking on Oklahoma, 7 p.m.
I'll go with Oklahoma.
Got an Oklahoma as well. Clemson and Mississippi State, ACC versus SEC here. CBS Sports Network at 7:30.
I'll go with Clemson.
Got Clemson as well. Number 3, Villanova, taking on Boston College in the 2K Empire Classic, 8:30 p.m. on ESPN. Should be a good one there.
I'll go with Villanova.
I've got Villanova. VCU taking on Utah State up at the Sanford Pentagon, 8:30 p.m. on ESPN2.
I'll go with Utah State.
I got VCU. Eastern Illinois taking on number 7, Wisconsin, 9 p.m., Big Ten Network.
I'll go with Wisconsin.
At Wisconsin, UCLA, the 22nd-ranked Bruins, taking on San Diego State, a team that was, of course, top 5 much of last year, not ranked preseason. This year, 9:30 p.m. Central Time on CBS Sports Network.
I'll go with San Diego State.
I'm going to go with the upset San Diego State as well. Prairie View A&M Northwestern, that game was canceled. Baylor, Arizona State, that was the big one that was canceled, 2 versus 18. Gardner, Webb, and Duke was canceled. South Dakota State, Creighton was canceled. Iona, Fordham was canceled. Point Park and Robert Morris was canceled. Charlotte and Tennessee was canceled. Eastern Washington and Oregon was postponed. Drexel and Penn State was postponed. Central Arkansas, Ole Miss was canceled. Bellarmine taking on Chattanooga, that game was postponed. Jackson State and Arkansas State was canceled. Utah Valley, Stanford was canceled. Northern Arizona, Arizona was canceled. Xavier, Louisiana, taking on Louisiana Lafayette. That game was canceled. Colorado Christian, Denver was canceled. Brescia, Murray State was canceled. Detroit Mercy, Richmond was postponed. Wichita State, Utah State was canceled. Portland State, Washington was canceled. So a lot of cancellations, Alex, but also a lot of games taking place. That brings us to Iowa's game against the North Carolina Central Eagles. Of course, Iowa preseason ranked number 5 in the country. We've talked about them ad nauseum. This game will be on BTN and Carver-Hawkeye Arena, but no fans allowed, just parents and staff. I believe the media will be there as well. Iowa, of course, projected to win by basically every metric known to man. The money line is, let's see here. The spread is, that can't be right. 4.5 for Iowa? That can't be right. That can't be right. I don't know what world. I don't know what else to say about this game. 3 p.m. Central Time on Big Ten Network. Who you got, Iowa and North Carolina Central? Give me a.
Well, if I was betting, I'd probably do it differently. I kind of want it to be close. I'd say Iowa 85 to 77.
If they give up 77 points, I'm going to be disappointed. I'm going to go Iowa 97, North Carolina Central 57. I don't think this game will be close. I could be wrong. I just don't think it will be. By the way, I'm really looking forward to seeing how Patrick McCaffrey plays. He's a guy that I think could be a real factor, especially on the offensive end this year. And then let's make our pick, Iowa and Southern University. Again, another very good team last year in their conference. That game will be on Friday, right after the Iowa-Nebraska football game. It will be at 4 p.m. on Big Ten Network, so literally like a half hour or less after the Nebraska game. This game was, talk about, can you imagine, Alex, five, or what is that, from four to six? Can you imagine six better hours of being a Hawkeye than being able to watch football and basketball back-to-back?
Well, they probably be better than that even when they play Gonzaga that day. What day is that?
That's the 19th of December. Yeah. Yeah. Basketball will be first in that one. But give me a final score, Southern and Iowa.
I'll go 95-55.
I'm going to go Iowa 102.
With 5-21 last year or something.
Huh? No, though Southern was the team that was second in their conference. You're thinking of Western Illinois.
Okay. I recant that then.
Okay. What's your final score?
I'll go 80-65.
I will go 102-70 even. I think they still take care of business. I have a hard time seeing Iowa playing these games close, but you never know. They were good teams last year, and Iowa, would be nice to see Iowa at least tested early. I mean, Southern was riding a winning streak when last season's tournament was canceled, so you never know. By the way, those odds I was looking at, that was for North Carolina, Iowa. It doesn't look like they've got odds on these smaller games. So North Carolina, Iowa right now, Iowa's favored by 4.5. So just a tidbit of news there. Let's move over to college football as we're pushing an hour and a half here on our show. Don't want to split this into two parts again, so show on the road here. Let's start with a huge, 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 huge game in the Big 12 between number 15 Iowa State and number 20 Texas. Big 12, first place in the Big 12 conference on the line here. Who you got, Cyclones or the Longhorns down in Austin?
I'll go with Cyclones.
I'm going to go Texas, but believe me, Iowa State is really, really good, and looks like they're going to be in the Big 12 championship game. I mean, I think they've got an excellent chance at that, and if they don't win the Big 12, we may see Iowa. I think it'd be great to see Iowa and Iowa State in a bowl game, don't you think? Or maybe not a bowl game, but at least a neutral field game in place of a bowl game.
It'd be interesting, I guess. I mean, we kind of got gypped out of that matchup before, so yeah, I mean, why not?
That's Friday, 11 a.m. on ABC, so Black Friday is going to start earlier than noon for Iowa fans. Cyclones and Longhorns, that'll be fun. And then at 2:30, another great game, number 2 Notre Dame at number 25 North Carolina. Notre Dame, of course, undefeated, trying to make the playoff. That game will also be on ABC.
I'll go with North Carolina.
I'm going to go Notre Dame. I'd love to see the Tar Heels win, though. 6:30 p.m. on ESPN, Oregon at Oregon State in Corvallis.
I'll go Oregon.
I will go with Oregon as well, but you never know. Rivalry games can get weird. By the way, there are a couple games on Thursday if people want to watch a Thanksgiving college football game on Fox Sports 1 and CBS Sports Network. Let's see. Friday, Central Florida and South Florida, ESPN at 2:30.
I'll go with South Florida.
Going with the upset, I'll go Central Florida. There, Stanford and California, 3 p.m. on Fox.
I'll go with Stanford.
I'll go with Cal at home here. Let's see. Had some games that have been canceled. Southern Miss, UAB was canceled. San Diego State, Fresno State canceled. Washington State canceled. Okay. Let's go to Saturday. Kentucky at number 6, Florida, ESPN 11 a.m.
I'll go with Florida.
I will go with Florida as well. Texas Tech at number 21, Oklahoma State. They're trying to recover from a loss to Oklahoma. 11 a.m. Saturday on Fox.
I'll go with Oklahoma State.
I've got Oklahoma State as well. Number 24, Tulsa at Houston, 11 a.m. ESPNU.
I'll go with Tulsa.
Go Houston in the upset. Sliding down the list here, get some notable games to pick. Number 16, Coastal Carolina at Texas State, 2 p.m. ESPN Plus.
I'll go with Coastal Carolina.
I'll go Coastal as well. They got a chance to be undefeated. Number 23, Louisiana at Louisiana Monroe, ESPN 3 at 2.
I'll go with Louisiana.
I've got Louisiana. How about the Iron Bowl? Number 22, Auburn at number 1, Alabama, 2:30 p.m. on none other than CBS.
I'll go with Auburn.
I'll go Bama, but I'd love to see Auburn win. 2:30 on ESPN for Pittsburgh at number 4, Clemson.
I'll go with Clemson.
We'll go Clemson as well. Colorado at number 19, USC, 2:30 on ABC.
I'll go with USC.
Yeah, USC. Number 7, Cincinnati at Temple, ESPNU at 3.
I'll go with Cincinnati.
I've got Cincinnati. Let's see here. LSU at number 5, Texas A&M, ESPN at 6.
I'll go with LSU.
I've got A&M. How about number 13, Georgia at South Carolina, SEC Network at 6:30?
I'll go with Georgia.
Got Georgia. Number 14, Oklahoma at West Virginia, 6:30 on ABC. Should be a good one in the Big 12.
I'll go with Oklahoma.
Iowa State fans are rooting for West Virginia, but I'll take the Sooners. TCU in Kansas, 7 p.m., Fox Sports 1.
I'll go with TCU.
TCU. And Louisiana Tech, Florida International was canceled. I think we're going to have a game Sunday between Utah and Arizona State, although I'm not seeing a time on that game. And we'll have a game next Tuesday as part of this week of action. But let's go over to the Big 10 now and actually make our picks for Big 10 games. You know, usually this time of year, Alex, Black Friday is usually the last regular season game of the year. Doesn't it feel weird having Black Friday stuff and football or basketball starting at this point? It just seems weird. Everything's backed up.
Yeah, honestly, it doesn't even feel weird to me. I'm just numb at this point.
Okay. Number 3, Ohio State and Illinois, Saturday at 11 a.m. on Fox Sports 1.
I'll go with Ohio State.
This is going to be a game to watch because Illinois looked really good against Nebraska. Could they challenge Ohio State? I doubt it, but we'll see. I will go with Ohio State. Maryland coming off a COVID pause. I expect them to be back in action this Saturday at number 12, Indiana, 11 a.m. on ESPN2.
I'll go with Indiana.
I'll go Indiana, but this is a trap game if you're the Hoosiers and Maryland if they're healthy. Penn State and Michigan, 11 a.m. ABC.
I'll go with Michigan.
I'm going Penn State in the upset. Minnesota and number 18, Wisconsin, 1 p.m. Big Ten Network. And this is not a game that means a whole lot to Iowa. I mean, you're probably rooting for Minnesota. Simply because Wisconsin's still ahead of Iowa, but again, Iowa controls its own destiny if they win out as far as getting to number 2 in the West.
I'll go with Wisconsin.
I will go with Wisconsin as well, 1 p.m. Big Ten Network. 2:30 p.m.
Ranked 18, do you?
Huh?
You think they should be ranked that?
Well, they're 2-1, and they blew out Michigan and Illinois. Hmm. I mean, I think Iowa will beat them.
Yeah.
I really do. I think Iowa will beat Wisconsin this year. Well, yeah. And Northwestern's darn good. I mean, Northwestern is darn good, especially defensively. But I just don't think all the hype with Graham Mertz that first week, a little overboard. Illinois was not the same team they seem to be now. We'll see what they do against Minnesota because Minnesota looked a lot better last week. This could be an interesting game, though. 2:30 p.m. Central Time for number 11, Northwestern. It is at Michigan State. Can Michigan State find a way to pull off an upset that every Iowa fan will be rooting for? This is going to be the game to watch. You're an Iowa fan Saturday. I hate to say it, and it's probably going to spoil all of our hopes and dreams. 2:30 p.m. ESPN2.
I think if Joe Lombardi has a good game, I think that Michigan State wins this one, so I'll take Michigan State.
I don't think Lombardi's even the same. I think he got benched.
Well, I think they'll have to bring in Joe Lombardi. So.
Okay. Number, let's see. By the way, I'm going Northwestern. Rutgers and Purdue, 3 p.m. on FS1.
I'll go with Purdue.
I will go with Rutgers. Nah, I'm going to go Purdue. Purdue looked good last week. I'll go Purdue. That could be a good game. And no night game for the Big Ten on Saturday. How about Nebraska and Iowa? 12 p.m. Central Time, Black Friday. This is usually a game that we really, really hype up. It's usually the last game of the year. Of course, in 2015, it was the game that vaulted Iowa to 12-0. Luke McCaffrey is now the primary quarterback, it seems like, for Nebraska. Adrian Martinez has kind of taken that secondary role. McCaffrey hasn't looked very good. I mean, one touchdown, five interceptions thus far this season. He can run the football. He actually leads Nebraska in rushing yards, which is not a good sign if you're Nebraska. Wandell Robinson is probably their biggest threat from a passing standpoint. But Nebraska's been pretty abysmal. I mean, you look at last week, Illinois thoroughly dominated them. Let me run through the numbers here for the Huskers. Last week against Illinois. Now, of course, we know that they lost to Ohio State week one, 52-17. They had their second game against Wisconsin canceled. They challenged Northwestern. That's a game. That's what's weird about this. They challenged Northwestern, only lost by a touchdown and a two-point conversion. Lost to Penn State, or actually beat Penn State by seven. And then they just got basically de-pantsed against Illinois, 41-23. And you look at the numbers here. Illinois looked good for the first time all year. I mean, let me look at team stats. Nebraska allowed Illinois to run for an average of 5.5 per rush. They ran 52 times. Controlled time of possession, 36-23. And Nebraska turned the ball over five times. So if Nebraska cleans up turnovers, they can make this game close. But I just don't see it right now. I could be wrong, but give me a key for Iowa to win Friday against the Huskers, even if it is the last second field goal.
I think if they just continue dominating, you know, both sides of the line, I don't see this game being a problem. You know, Iowa's healthy at running back, and they have good running backs, and the line's been really good. So I just don't see where the chink in that armor is going to be. And on defense, they've been pretty good. I mean, I'm not too worried about getting the top blown off, I guess, which might be my only concern in most games. Can't really say I'm concerned in this game about that, but I think as long as they just play solid, I guess as far as things I'd want to see, I'd like to see, even though it probably won't happen as far as him getting a lot of usage, but I'd like to see Petras really get into a rhythm. I don't know what that would look like, really, but I don't know. I don't think that'll probably happen, but I guess the key would just be to continue what they're doing and dominate on the ground. And, you know, they've been winning, I guess. I haven't really looked at the numbers, but probably winning time of possession, but I don't feel like they've been on the field all that long because they're getting such huge chunks of yardage a lot of the time. They're not really relying on that, but when you run the ball that well, you tend to dominate clockwise. So I think if they continue doing that, I don't think it'll be a big challenge to win this game as long as they play solid. So the only issue I'd say, the only other key is basically just the secondary to hold their own and not allow any big plays and not allow, you know, a couple touchdowns. You know, if you have a couple blown plays, you know, that can make things a little bit more dicey. But I think as long as they don't do that, I think Iowa comfortably wins this game.
Now, I get these weren't Scott Frost years, but everybody talking about, well, Iowa had to, you know, rely on two last-second field goals the last 2 years, but they did beat Nebraska 40-10 in 2016. They beat him. What did they beat him in 2015? You look here, 2015 Iowa. And they dominated this series. I know that the last two meetings have been close. Nebraska's made second-half comebacks. Let's see here. Iowa beat Nebraska 28-20 and 15. See, 2017, though. 2016 was 40-10. 2017. was... Why is that giving me 16 numbers? I don't want 16 numbers. Let me, here we go. 2017. That was a lopsided game. That's why I wanted to look this up. Iowa beat Nebraska on the road, 56-14. I think it's going to be a score very similar to that this year. Maybe not 56 points, but if this game's close, I'll be very surprised. Now, it could be close, but I just think with the way Iowa's been consistently dominating teams on the ground, I don't know how Nebraska can win the line of scrimmage. And, I mean, they may be able to hit a couple bombs or get a turnover or two. I don't know, but I just don't know how I don't know how they're going to win this game. I really don't. And maybe that's a scary thought to just be penciling Iowa in as the victors here. But I think Iowa wins this game as long as they control the line of scrimmage, which they should. With that being said, give me a final score for the Black Friday contest.
Oh, I don't want to sound cocky, but I'll have to go like 38. 38-20.
I'm going to go 40-24. I think Iowa puts up numbers. I think Nebraska does get loose, like you said, for a couple big plays, but I think Iowa wins 40-24, and that's another dominant win if they do. And they'll go into an Illinois game, which, again, we'll want to follow Illinois this week against Ohio State because that could be a tough game for Iowa. Am I correct in saying that Illinois game is at Illinois? Let me look this up here. Not sure. that game's at Illinois. That could be a tough game, especially right before the Wisconsin game. So this is a game where Iowa has to win. I mean, obviously, I think they got to win every game on the, you know, they can end up 6-2, even if they don't win the West. I think we can both agree that's a pretty good season.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I predicted them going in. I didn't think the loss, well, I did have one of the scheduled losses against Northwestern, but I didn't think the other one would be Purdue. But 6-2, you know, it's kind of kind of what I expected, I guess. I'm not saying I'd be terribly happy with that, but at this point, you know, that's as best as they can do. So as long as they win out, I mean, it's as good as it gets.
All right, Iowa and Nebraska in football, Friday, noon Central Time on Fox from Iowa City, Iowa. The weather for this game, 47, partly cloudy, and yeah, I mean, should be pretty good conditions for this game. Let me look up wind projections here because that's usually the biggest factor. Let's see. I'm going to look up Central Iowa here because it's the most convenient. Okay, so yeah, hopefully they don't have rain like we have had these last 2 days. Let's see.
Saying sunny for Marshalltown. So.
Do you see a wind, though?
No.
Do you see a wind forecast? Let's see here. Daily.
Not showing wind, so, I mean, it'd have to be under 20, which isn't saying much, but it's not showing over 20 as of now. So
yeah, I'm showing about 9 to 15 miles per hour, so that's pretty doable. And again, if Iowa can dominate the line and run the football, I think they're going to win either way. So again, Iowa, Nebraska, noon Central Time from Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City, Iowa on Friday. And that game will be televised nationally on Fox. Should be a good one. And then, of course, Wednesday, tomorrow, Iowa and what do we got tomorrow? North Carolina Central at 3 p.m. inside Carver Hawkeye Arena in Iowa City. And then Friday, the basketball team is right back out in action. Just, what, a stone's throw away from Kinnick Stadium and the Nebraska-Iowa football game. It'll be Iowa and Southern University at 4 p.m. In Iowa City, Iowa. Again, that game will be on Big Ten Network. Both basketball games this week on Big Ten Network. We thank you for joining us for week 137 of Brad's Brand of Thoughts. We will be back next week to talk what's happened in basketball, what's happened in football, and hopefully previewing more Iowa steamrolling teams in football and Iowa basketball on the right track. And hopefully, again, thoughts and prayers to Jack Nungy and his family. Hopefully he'll be able to rejoin the team soon, and his team will be right there to support him along what should be a very enjoyable season ahead. Thanks for joining us for week 137. We'll talk to you next week. Go Hawks!